Greetings and salutations on this hump day. It is the it's all downhill from here. You know, some of our best-selling cars are like, okay, I'm a Nissan dealer, so Nissan Rogue. Never have liked that name. But, you know, it's our best-selling vehicle when we can get them. And then the new Pathfinder, my goodness. What a great car. What a great-looking vehicle, you know, for a three-row crossover. You know, look at the Kia Tellurides and Toyota Highlanders out there. And let's see, what's in the Honda Pilot. Yeah. You know, they're not as pretty as the new Pathfinder. I'm jealous. I'm biased, not jealous. I'm jealous because I can't get enough of them. But they are somewhat scarce, but they're going to be more plentiful. It's amazing. I've talked to Mitch Walters the other day. You know, he's the guy that owns the Friendship Group. Wonderful guy. Good friend of mine. We were talking about, you know, he's got multiple franchises. I've just got two. But he has, it's interesting to hear him talk about all the different issues that he has had with the different manufacturers and how, you know, sometimes you get a lot of product from one and the other ones are down and then that'll flip-flop. You know, why can't they all just coordinate, you know, and get all these chips from the same place and or at least a couple of places? I tell you that for sure you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. I think that all of the manufacturers have come to the conclusion that microprocessors, commonly called computer chips, are so essential to the operation of vehicles that I don't know if they want to leave that to a supplier anymore. Although, you know, to build a fab, that's what the plants are called. They're called fabs. To build a fab, it's in the billions of dollars. And if you're just supplying yourself, then, you know, you don't get the economies of scale. You might need to make them for somebody else as well. You know, maybe partner. You know, General Motors and Ford partnered on transmissions a few years ago. Yeah, if you buy a Chevy Silverado or an F-150, they got the same tranny in them. 10-speed automatic. Same thing with the Camaro and the Mustang. I think the Ford Explorer and the, what is the Chevrolet? Chevrolet Venture. No, that was their van. Oh, whatever they sell. That thing, that their three-row crossover. What is that? Oh, Traverse. Yeah. They use the same transmission. I think it's a 9-speed automatic. It's a lot of gears, isn't it? I remember driving a 1974 SS Nova, and it had a 2-speed Power Glide transmission. It was really loud, then it was really quiet. Those cars needed a 4-speed manual. And then they came with 5-speeds, and you know, and then they, as far as automatics, they developed the lock-up torque converter. That was a brainchild of somebody to help eliminate some of the slippage inside of a automatic transmission. They still use lock-up torque converters to this day. It's a pretty cool invention. But you think about all these different cars that have come down the pipeline, and we are now beholden to a wafer of silicone with some copper on it. So I don't know how this is going to play out. I was driving Abby's Bronco. She has a new Ford Bronco, 2-door, 7-speed. We actually drove it to Birmingham when we went to Birmingham the other day, like a 500-mile round trip. Not doing that again. Love the Bronco. It's just, man, those interstates, they need some work in Alabama. What's wrong with you, Alabama? Tennessee's interstate system, or at least the asphalt, is being maintained way better than Alabama. They run a pretty good football program, but their interstates aren't very good. But I was driving down the road, and when you push like the button for the window to go down, there's a delay. And see, at one time when you push the button for the window, there was a wire that went to the power window motor, and the window started going down. Now, that wire goes to a computer. It's called a module. And it goes to that module, and the module's sitting there saying, wait a minute, apparently Abby wants this window to go down. Okay, let's send some juice to the window. And it's like this delay. I noticed it also on the fan. You know, I was getting a little hot. It's a black vehicle. And I was getting a little hot, so I wanted to crank up the air conditioning. Well, I turn it, and there's this, like, I don't know, it's like a second or two delay before the air conditioning really starts saying, hey, he wants to turn up the air conditioning or turn up the fan speed. So that's just, there's chips that are making all the decisions. Well, maybe they're not making the decisions, but, well, sometimes they are, you know. Tesla has a problem sometimes with a vehicle trying to decide, now, is that a tractor trailer that's getting ready to pull in front of me, or is that a road sign? And then, you know, the car actually drives under the tractor trailer that they thought that it thought was a road sign, and becomes a problem for the driver. We talked a few episodes ago about LIDAR, radar. That's a light type of a radar that uses a different type of technology, and it's much more accurate, but it's not totally available right now. They're still using cameras and radio waves. I'm never going to trust a self-driving car. I'll just tell you that right now. And it's going to be a long time before I want to buy an EV. I'm getting ready to go to the beach. I've got, you know, 500 miles, and I've got to think about where am I going to charge and how many people are going to be sitting there ahead of me, and, you know, are there going to be any fist fights going on and stuff like that. So I'm not a player there. I'm more interested. I'd rather pay $5 a gallon for gas than have to sit for 40 minutes or, you know, three times that waiting on somebody to quit charging their overpriced electric vehicle. Can you tell me a little anti-EV? I hope there's no Ford executives listening. They're all over EVs. Matter of fact, they're dividing the company into two pieces. I think I mentioned that to you. The EV part, which you order your cars online. There will be no dealer inventory. You come into the dealership, and we'll have one. Not just me. It'll be Friendship and, you know, John City Ford and all the Ford dealers. We won't have any. We just have one for you to look at, test drive and stuff like that, and then you order yours. Now, how long is it going to take to get it? Well, right now, who knows? But hopefully when they get it, the chip shortage, slaves to silicone situation takes care of itself, then we'll be able to maybe get a vehicle and, I don't know, what's too long to wait? I mean, I could wait a month or two. It used to be 6 to 8 weeks is what we told everybody. And sometimes they'd come in 4 weeks. That was rare. Sometimes they would come in 10 weeks, which people were screaming. Now, I mean, I've had people waiting over a year for a vehicle. That's unacceptable. But they'll figure it out, maybe. You know, they've been trying to figure it out forever, trying to get the delivery time. I remember in the 70s, you know, people say, I need to order a car. How long would it take? 6 to 8 weeks. Last year, 2 years ago, how long would it take to order a car? About 6 to 8 weeks for it to come in. You would think that with all this time, they could have figured out how to speed that process up. You know, the problem is the number of options that you can get on a vehicle. With Ford, way too complicated. With Toyota, Nissan, Honda, they don't let you order cars. They have a guy that sits in a corporate office. Like for Nissan, he's in Nashville. He says, okay, we're going to build this many of these, this many of these, this many is going to have leather, this many is going to have the convenience package. You know, they make all those decisions. They build the cars. It's just the factories are dialed in, and they can produce the vehicles quicker. But see, people in Americans like to order stuff, and they like to be able to pick and choose what they want. Thank goodness we're not selling Porsches, because you can actually get custom color paints. Used to be able to do that with GM and Ford, but you can't do that anymore unless you're a big fleet customer and you order, you know, 10,000 of them. Then you can get any color you want. Remember when Henry Ford's favorite saying was, you can get any color Ford you want as long as it's black. It's not that way anymore. Okay, I'm going to take my first break, and we'll be back in just a minute. You know, sometimes we'd like to break myths. Mythbusters, as far as cars are concerned. And there's a few myths out there that I would like to address. One of those myths is that dealers do not like to do warranty work. So you got this problem, and, you know, you can't seem to get it fixed, and you go in and you start yelling in the service drive at the innocent service advisor because he can't get your car fixed, and you just say, well, you guys just don't want to fix my car. That's never true. Folks, that's just never true. We want you to be happy. Every dealer wants you to be happy. The service advisors don't like to see a customer coming back in. Oh, no. Here he comes. Oh, gosh. What did we forget? They don't like that. They like to see you going off happy. And when you get your customer satisfaction survey, you fill it out and check all the boxes on the right-hand side. They love that. Get good Google ratings. That's what dealers want. They don't want to make you upset. You know, it's just unfortunately that, you know, we have people, humans, that are doing the work, turning the wrenches. I said unfortunate. I don't mean that. I don't want to replace them with robots. But, you know, humans have moods and bad days and good days and lapses in concentration. Things happen. Now, they're not supposed to, but they do. And service advisors. You know, one of the things I cannot tolerate is somebody that fails to follow up with a customer. I am one of those guys that insist on proactivity. A customer should never have to follow up to see if, you know, what the status is of their repair. That should be flowing from the dealership to the customer. Don't you agree? It's our job to keep you updated. It's not your job to keep yourself updated on the status of your repair. You know, if we have a part ordered for a long time, we should call you once a week. You know, if it's a long-term problem, we should keep you informed. But, you know, when you have short staff, which a lot of businesses do, it's kind of hard to do. But we do want to do warranty work because we get paid really well to do warranty work. A lot of customers say, well, you know, the dealer's paying for that. They're having to eat that. Nope. We charge Ford the warranty labor rate, which is the same thing as our retail door rate. And they send us the money every week. I mean, they're pretty good at paying. And then they pay us full retail. There was a recent ruling in the state of Tennessee and a lot of other states that there was a lawsuit that dealers weren't able to get full retail for their parts from the manufacturer. Well, they do now, you know, because the law passed, and all of a sudden we get to charge Ford full retail price for parts. So when we put a new air, let's say we had to put a new air conditioning compressor on your car, we get full retail price from Ford. Now, sometimes the labor that Ford pays for certain operations under warranty, or General Motors or Honda or anybody, is not quite as much as what it would be on a like one of the commercial rating companies like Motors or Chilton's. Those are two companies that determine labor times, because most dealers charge flat rate. So, you know, another myth is that dealers just charge whatever the heck they want to for repairs, and that's just not true. There are things called labor time guides. And so what has happened is these really smart people have sat down with a stopwatch, and they've watched good mechanics do certain basic operations, like replacing a radiator or putting on a set of brakes or brake pads or turning rotors or replacing a rear differential or pulling an engine and putting it back in. You know, every single type of operation, it's been calculated how long it would take a good mechanic to do that job. So those times, you know, let's say it's half an hour to do a particular operation. Well, that time is in the book for that particular operation. So when you come in, if you have to have that operation done on your car, when it comes to billing you, they look it up in the labor time. It's half an hour times the labor rate that the dealership charges. And so what if it takes the mechanic, let's say it pays 30 minutes, but it takes the mechanic 3 hours to find the problem and to solve it because of his, you know, maybe he's not as skilled as some other mechanics. Guess what you get charged? Half an hour, because we use a labor time guide. Well, what if he does it in 15 minutes because of his high skill level? What do you get charged? Half an hour. Because, you know, the technician is getting rewarded for his, and of course, they're paid on commission. All of them are. They're paid based on flat rate hours that they generate out of a labor time guide or a warranty time guide. So it's really, you know, the way it's done is really in the interest of a consumer. But then, you know, a lot of people bring their car in and they get shocked, you know, how much it costs to repair a vehicle. And but it's based on a labor time guide. Now, one dealer may have a higher labor rate than another. I think it's important for you to go in and find out what your labor rate in your store. Right now, you're finding a lot of dealers in the $100 to $120 an hour. You may say, well, that sounds high. Well, it kind of does, but, you know, what's it cost to go to the doctor? You know, and another myth I want to address is basically when you come in and you got a check engine light on, or if you've got an electrical issue, how much should the store charge you to figure out what's wrong with your car? That's often referred to as a diagnostic charge. So when you bring your car into the dealership, let's say that you've got a, I don't know, your lights are flickering on and off, and we have to go in and we do a lot of investigation. We're trying to find the source of this problem. Is it a loose wire somewhere? Is it, you know, it's just not as obvious, especially with all of these computers. And, you know, one of the first things that happens for most repairs when you bring them in, unless it's just regular maintenance, is we get our little laptop out and plug it into your OBD port. And you didn't even know you had an OBD port, but you do. It's underneath your steering wheel. And we plug right into that. And if you have a light that says check engine or service engine soon or something like that, then we're going in there and it's telling us what could be the problem. But that's not always what the problem is. Sometimes you, if you just start replacing parts, you're just spending the customer's money, and you're not solving the problem. Now, you know, if you go into a store and they keep throwing parts at a problem and not fixing it, do you owe them for those parts? No, you don't. There's a lot of shops will charge, you know, because they're chasing after your problem, and you shouldn't tolerate that. They can put those parts back in the box and send them back. Now, you, those are the kind of issues that just drive customers crazy, and I totally get it. I mean, it drives me crazy, too. I had an air conditioner broken down in my house, and I felt like they were chasing parts with that one time. And it's frustrating. I said, I'm not paying for that compressor. It didn't need a compressor. Well, it would need one in a few years anyway. That's not what it needs now. Now, should it? A dealer charge you a diagnostic charge if they don't do any repairs. You know, this is another myth, and I think this is a myth where customers assume that, you know, they can actually spend all this time chasing after a problem and not charge for that. Now, when you go to the doctor's office, does he charge you if he doesn't find anything wrong with you? Of course he does, because you're taking up his time. You know, if you have somebody, a plumber or somebody like that, comes to your house to, you know, try to fix a problem, and he ends up just pulling a hairball out of the sink, and you say, well, I could have done that. And you get a bill for $250 just because you're paying for his time. He could have gone someplace else and made that same amount of money. So when you come into a car dealership to get a problem diagnosed, the clock starts, and that's fair. It just can't run on and on and on and on. And that's where, you know, you have to, you know, if you have that kind of a situation, you have questions about or whatever, you can always give me a call and I'll give you some guidance. But the best thing to do, if you want to leave me out of it, is just talk to the service manager or service advisor and set the expectations. Say, listen, I don't want you spending a lot of my money trying to find this out. I'm going to set a limit on this. And so how many hours do you think it will take to, I mean, what would it normally take to run something like this down? And they may say, well, maybe 2.5 hours. And so that's $100, $200 or whatever. Don't be afraid to make them an offer. You know, I can't really afford that. Could you do it for $100? You know, maybe they'll take that. You just don't know unless you ask. Right. My wife used to get embarrassed because I would negotiate everywhere. I would go to Lowe's to buy a grill and say, well, would you take $200? And they kind of look at you funny. What? I have to ask my manager. Okay, go ask him. Lenny, what'd you do that for? He you embarrassed him. I said, I don't care if I can save $50. You never know if you don't ask. All right, I'll take my last break. Be back in just a minute. You know, there's this old-timey myth about buying cars that if you pay cash, you get a better deal. There's still, you'll see some old-timers come in and they'll say, well, now what if I pay you cash money? See, you know where that comes from? That comes from the 50s and 60s when dealers used to floor plan their own cars and they had their money tied up in the car. And you know, it was just a lot quicker than sometimes dealers would finance their own cars. Well, would you rather have all your money now or would you rather wait on it? I'd rather have all my money now. So that's when paying cash up front sped up the cash flow. Well, it doesn't work that way anymore. You know, if you finance a car today, if you sign a contract at my dealership today to buy a car and you finance it through, I don't know, Eastman or somebody like that, I'll get funded on that either this evening or tomorrow. So that's pretty quickly, and don't care whether you pay cash or not. So it won't influence the deal. So I guess, you know, anytime you're talking about cars and, you know, it's such a big part of our lives, I guess. I mean, you may not like cars and the history of automobiles and all that stuff like I do, but you need your car. I mean, that's your mobility, and you want it to work. And when it doesn't work, it's just like real frustrating. It's like my daughter's house right now, the one she's buying. Well, it's my mom's house, and thank goodness my daughter is buying that house with her husband, and the air conditioning went out. And I don't worry about it. I said, I'll pay for it. But, you know, certain things don't work. It creates havoc. And she's got a four-year-old and a one-year-old in the house. And, you know, when the air conditioning's not working, it's not good. And it can cause disruption in your life, and people don't like that. If you've got any automobile questions about this kind of stuff, don't hesitate to call me. Don't call me this week. I'm going on vacation. But, no, send me a text at 423-552-2020, and I'll be glad to help you. That's what gurus do, or at least this guru. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.